From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Happy to be back once again.
Stealing my catchphrase.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Oh, hello.
Greetings, Bob.
Greetings.
Oh, greetings there. Oh,
hello.
Salutations.
Salutations.
Salutations, host of the most.
You don't hear that too much anymore. Salutations.
You could take salutations back.
Salutations?
You can own salutations.
Greetings and salutations. Salutations is just one way to say hello. Hello. I'll just say hello. Hello, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
There you go. I feel like you're stealing somebody else's catchphrase.
That's somebody else's. That's
just
trademark.
My family of yours, right?
Yeah, good evening.
Okay, I'll stop. Anyway, I'll let you continue.
Happy to be back here.
Yeah.
Another episode of Bob After Dark. It should be a real humdinger.
Hum,
as the kids
dinger,
call it.
A regular hoot and nanny.
A hoot and a half.
A
barn burner.
A barn raiser.
Then burn in it. Yeah, sure.
What's going on, Count? You doing okay?
Yeah, doing fine, Bob. You know, had a nice
weekend update.
Nice weekend, of course. The spring is here, and it feels like summer outside, getting there to that point. And you know, for me, it's bad because it's lighter out. And for a vampire, when
it stays lighter longer,
it gets light early and it stays lighter longer. And for
yes.
A vampire like me, that's not good. I mean, we're pushing this. We have to push the show back to 10 pretty soon because 9 o'clock.
Don't do that.
It's not. It's
don't
not
do
dark
that
enough.
To me.
Yeah, well, it's not dark. Enough.
I'm already. I came in the studio today, and you're like, "Oh, what's going on?" I'm like, "Local man yawns at 8 o'clock."
There you have it. Yeah. Well, we're at that age where we go to bed at 8 o'clock now.
Me, I had a very eventful weekend. If you're interested.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do?
So this past weekend, post heart attack, Bob is trying to like find what makes me happy again, and like trying to relax and let me be me. First and foremost, there is a new episode of the podcast out. It's
good.
About the Teke Teke, which we covered a couple weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to put it out because, you know, sickness happened. So there's a new episode of the podcast. I have one in the bank now, so we're good to go if there's an emergency over the next couple weeks. So I'm very excited good. About that. So that was first and foremost, being back into the swing of things as far as shows go. This past weekend, I took upon myself to get more involved in two hobbies I've been super interested in getting involved with. One was mead making.
Mead making?
Mead.
Okay.
M-E-A-D, like honey wine.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I somehow that fell across my lap when I was going through all my stuff. I
mead.
Found mead making, and I was like, it is not, you know. There's a lot to it, but it's not as involved as
it's something that always fascinated you.
Yeah, it fascinated me. I like drinking as much as the next person. So I'm like, let me try my hand at making this. And I have a batch fermenting right now, so that's kind of cool. And then my big one has been disc golf.
Disc golf.
Disc
wow.
golf. You ever been disc golfing before?
You know what? I've never tried it myself, but I know they still have them in the parks. There's some.
Yeah, I was at Forsyth Park today, actually.
Disc golf.
Yeah.
Is it something you've done before? You never
no,
tried it?
No, I got a set for Christmas because I brought it up like more or less as a joke.
Oh.
I was like, you know, I'm getting to that age where it's like, you know, quarter life crisis is a little beyond me. So I guess it's like my third life crisis,
yeah.
Third's life crisis. Anyway, so I read a meme where it's like every person needs to pick like a hobby when they get to a certain age. And
yeah.
One of them was disc golf. And I'm like, well, that's going to be me. I'm going to make my identity about disc golf. And so this past weekend, I have gone 3 days in a row.
3 days in a row?
3 days
wow,
in a row.
How
and there's a potential for a fourth tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Now for the operation, how long does that take so you get, when is it drinkable, Bob? When can I drink the mead? Does it take like
It
a,
takes a month for the fermentation process, okay. and then probably another month or so for the aging.
Okay.
As soon as it's ready to go, me and you can enjoy it together.
How's now, do that you sound? Pretty good. Do you think this is something that will maybe catch on the shops, Bob After Dark Mead?
You know what? Ultimate goal is to make like a fall Halloween spooky mead with like pumpkins and, you know, like a pumpkin or like a cinnamon nutmeg deal.
Like purple or something.
Yeah, but yeah, it's got to be purple, right? So I got to figure that part out. Purple pumpkins?
Purple pumpkins.
So that's the ultimate goal. And I'm like, oh, you know, there's a purple. Lot that goes for me just making one home batch to like big production Bob After Dark mead would be like a, it's like a big deal. But for what I got right now, I'm very happy.
Well, great. And you know what? That's one thing you never covered on the show, speaking of purple. You never covered the purple people eater.
I don't think that's a real...
It's not a cryptid?
It's not a cryptid, man.
It's a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
Listen, April Fool's Day, 2024. So that's it.
My congrats, weekend. Bob.
Yeah, thank you. Meets. Meet and disc golf. That's been Bob's weekend.
You got to have a lot of patience.
Oh, I was at the Oddities Expo. I went to the Milwaukee Oddities Expo at the
How was that?
Night. It was packed.
Odd?
Very busy. Yeah. Very busy, but it was a good time. I forgot
Did you
to
see
mention it.
What's the coolest thing you see there? Anything...
I met the gentleman who created the International Paranormal Society.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Nice.
His name slips my mind, an Australian fellow.
Very nice.
Oi, yeah. I'm trying to think what else I saw. There was lots of cool things I saw. Monsterology was there, and they were out in full gear with like their full cryptid patches and stickers and stuff.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool to see. Yeah. But I digress. If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish podcast where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in a night, lights in the sky, and, of course, what kind of wine does Count Panic like?
Bob, you got it. This is a good one. I'm a vampire. Sometimes I enjoy the occasional glass of wine, but something that's, like blood red.
Blood red, huh?
The closest I could find to, like, a blood red wine.
Cab?
Yeah, nice cab.
I'm a fan of the cab myself. Yeah, that's usually what I drink. Yeah. But mead.
Takes me back to the good old days.
Ask me how much mead I drink in my private life, by the way.
How much mead do you
drink? I don't drink a lot of mead, so somewhere down that line, I'm like, I'm going to make my own.
You know, it's offered at some local establishments about around here. You know, it does pack a wallop to its punch, doesn't it?
It does, and the kind I made is straight hooch.
It's moonshine.
Yeah, it's going to be a potent bottle when it's done, because I goofed up and added way too much honey and way too much yeast.
What's your ABVs?
I didn't measure because I'm still learning that part.
Yeah.
My guess is going to be somewhere between 18 and 19% ABV.
Bottle that up. And
it's going to be a potent day, I'll tell you. It's going to be like that time you gave me those gummy bears.
You can't be eating those.
Jeez. So anyway, we split the show up into two parts. Our first part's the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, or me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird, creepy news of the week. This is anything from like ghost sightings making it to big national news, or cryptid sightings, the weird and unusual, weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or just general strangeness or high strangeness, if you will. And our first news article is actually something that Count Panic was prepared for.
Yeah.
I feel like I deserve a kudos.
Hey.
Written to us by Tim, but not to us by Tim Binall, but Tim Binall wrote it for me to then read what Tim Binall wrote. Yeah. This is for Coast to Coast AM, had this on their website, and it is ghost filmed in Argentine butcher shop. A puzzling piece of footage circulating online shows what appears to be a ghost exiting the back room of a butcher shop moment before a knife explosible from a table. The peculiar video is reportedly captured by a security camera in the city of, pardon my enunciation, Chaco, C-H-A-C-O, and subsequently found its way on a TikTok in the footage, which has gone viral on social media in Argentina. A dark figure can be seen exiting a room as a butcher shop employee walks past a long metal table covered in meat. Suddenly, a knife falls from the floor as if it's been pushed by an unseen force, leaving a second employee baffled. When the workers later looked at the security footage, they were surprised to see a mysterious stranger exiting the back room prior from when the knife turned from the table. Upon a closer examination of the video, they were all the more bewildered when they noticed that an eerie figure appears to be transparent, as only their upper body is visible in the video while the table can clearly be seen where their leg should be. As one might imagine, many viewers online have suggested that the stranger is a ghost or an entity to a shadow person, akin to a shadow person. While more skeptical, observers argue that the footage is merely a clever hoax or the result of a camera glitch. What do you make of the video, Count Panic? Hashtag Panic's take.
Now, Bob, I did see the video.
He did see the video, folks, yeah. And it's not like I just sent it to him.
No, no. I seen it be hours in advance here. Now, the knife falling off the table, yes, that was crazy, unexpected. I didn't see anything there. The one clear shot was when the boy, there was an image or a visual of a boy kind of disappearing into the wall. I thought that was pretty crystal clear. I know we're going to post on the page there. But
it'll be on there so you can see it.
Yeah, I don't know. You think that's doctored in a sense? Because that was a pretty good image of a specter, a spook, you could say, a ghost. It was there. I could see it with my bare eyes, and it looked like a real person there, a real kid. So if this video was doctored, it makes sense. But if it wasn't doctored, that's unbelievable footage they have there, Bob.
You know,
what do you
have to put my skeptic cap on real quick.
Yeah.
If that is an actual video footage of a straight apparition, first off, not a shadow person,
yeah.
I could clearly see physical attributes of this person, of this ghostly figure. Not a shadow person throwing knives at people. The knife fell off the ground. Now, if Pat was here from Ghostly Podcast, he'd tell me something like the video's completely doctored and hoaxed to try to draw business for the butcher shop. But the image of the person's very fascinating. I'm curious if it's like an after image, like somebody walked by and the video just captured it later and it was like a blur. But the knife falling is interesting because it's in the video, it's pretty clearly tucked pretty up on the table unless somebody set like a wire up and they tripped it. But it's pretty good footage. So my skeptic cap went on because I did give due diligence and say maybe it was doctored. But that's my story and I'm sticking to it. I think it's a good video. I think it's good evidence. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know if they've ever had experiences prior to this.
I don't know. That's a good question. Good question.
I personally wouldn't go. I'm a vegetarian. I don't see, you know, me hanging out in butcher shops probably.
We might have some options for you.
You could go investigate the butcher shop. I'm not a vegetarian for ethical reasons, folks.
Yeah,
I'm a vegetarian because I'm allergic to processed meat.
Yeah.
But butcher shops, that smell of meat would just, that would make me sick to my stomach. So we'll send you in, Cal.
Sure, I'll go in there.
Yeah. All right.
Have the veal.
Let's move on here. So our next news article comes to us from the Daily Star, written by Ethan Blackshaw. Goliath Bigfoot footprint. Now you try saying that five times fast. Discovered that must have been left by a 20-foot beast. Bigfoot believers are in a frenzy after a woman shared a photo of a monster footprint found in the wilderness that's so huge, some reckon the beast that left it had to have been 20 feet tall. An image of the monster footprint pressed in the sand was shared on Bigfoot Believers' Facebook page by A. Jill Burke. In the comments section, she explained that she found it roughly 3 miles off the trail at Joshua Tree National Park in Southern California, United States. The caption read, "Found this print this morning," and this was yesterday, May 29th. Her post has more than 1,400 reactions. Jill placed her foot alongside the supposed Bigfoot footprint in the image to give a sense of the perspective. Her shoe is absolutely dwarfed by the track, which appears about two times the size. In the image, it doesn't have five toes. It looks like it has two. I'll send this over to you, Count. I'm one for one. I'm getting prepared for news.
I got one of them, at least.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
You know, I'm sending it over to you right now. But it's an interesting-looking video, or an interesting-looking photo, because usually on the Bigfoot stuff, to my understanding, usually I've seen them with at least more than two toes. But this one, the way I'm looking at it, it looks like it's two. I'm going with not real. I'm not a podiatrist by any means. Fun fact, my podiatrist that I do have once was on the Discovery Channel for Bigfoot
hunting. How about that? Hi.
Are you looking at the image?
I see it right here now.
Yeah, you looking
Bob.
At it?
I'm looking
okay,
at
good,
it.
Good.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Looks
Hashtag panic steak.
A legitimate Bigfoot there, Bob. I mean,
it's a Bigfoot. Do you actually think it's actually left by a Sasquatch?
I don't know, because in this day and age, you see those folks, they have the imprint, the little thing that goes around, and you could imprint it in the sand, a giant foot. So it's hard for me to say. I'm sure they would have to investigate this, take some samples of the footprint itself, and maybe you could take it to the lab, see what's up. But I mean, if say it's not the case where somebody's goofing around, it sure looks like a Bigfoot foot to me. But
The two toes are what's throwing me
you have
off.
these hooligans sometimes, aren't
I am
there?
not the biggest expert on Bigfoot footprints.
Yeah.
I will consult with somebody who is, and I will hopefully get an answer for you soon. I don't believe it. It looks
I think
too
somebody just kind of messing around there.
messing around,
Yeah.
because if you look right next to it, like directly, like not even an inch away, there's another set of footprints right there, like kind of in an X formation, as if they were practicing it beforehand. You see that off to the
I see
right of
that,
it?
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going with doctored. I don't believe it, but it's still fascinating. And I don't want to say that this Jill person was the one who posted it and saying it. I don't want to say that she was doing that doctored it. I'm saying I believe that somebody faked that footprint.
Yeah, I
So,
could see that, Bob.
what do you think? Believe or no?
I would like to believe, I want to believe, but I think I'm with you. I think it might be doctored a little bit there.
All right, let's
Yeah.
move on. Our last news article actually comes from WGN, Chicago's very own WGN,
That's what they say.
Chicago news thing here. Chicago is among the top cities in the U.S. for paranormal activity per survey. This is written by Larry Holley, Hawley. Chicago, if you're a fan of the supernatural, then the city is your place to be, according to a recent survey. Per Lon Love, the city is ranked third in the United States when it comes to paranormal activity. The company looked at 14 metrics when ranking the 200 biggest cities in America when it comes to their instances of the supernatural. They were put into four categories: sightings, haunted locations, lifestyle, and community. In the survey, Chicago was the second in the number of paranormal conventions and vampire friendliness, third in the number of paranormal sightings, and eighth in the number of haunted sites. In the four main categories, the city was third in lifestyle, fourth in community, 10th in haunted locations, and 11th in sightings. According to the system, Chicago had a score of 44.25, which put it behind the first place. Can you guess what the first place city was?
First place,
Los
Los
Angeles,
Angeles.
59.21, and second place, New York, 48, San Diego, 42. 0.83. Surprising, underneath Chicago was New Orleans, 39.56. That city like reeks of the
Yeah. So
paranormal. I
what's
am
going
very
on there?
surprised that's not higher on the
Yeah.
list, rounded out the top five. Would you like to know what an interesting other one that made the top 10
I
was?
would.
Indianapolis.
Really? Huh.
Indianapolis made the top, made in ninth place at a score of 36.82. Chicago was one of the five cities in the state of Illinois that were featured in Lon Love survey, with Rockford coming in next at 59th, Aurora at 84th, Joliet at 93rd, and Naperville came in the 160 out of 200 cities for the paranormal activity surveyed. So that is very interesting. Are you curious to know the full top 10?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Los Angeles, as I said, 59.21, New York at 48, Chicago 44.25, San Diego 42.83, New Orleans 39.56, Philadelphia 38.93, San Antonio, which I'm surprised not higher on the list, 37.61, Dallas at 37.50, Indianapolis 36.82, and last was Las Vegas on the 10,
Really?
36.1.
Interesting. That's a interesting top 10 there. But I would think some would be up higher, like you said, New Orleans and maybe some lower.
I'm very
Indy
surprised.
surprising, right?
I
Yeah.
didn't expect Indianapolis. I mean,
No.
I've been there, I've done investigations there in the past. The Hannah House is the first thing that comes to mind. The Slippery Noodle Inn's another one. But outside of that's
Not too much.
not too much going.
Yeah.
Indianapolis proper. I mean, if you're considering like, suburbs like the Whispers Estates and
Yeah.
stuff. But Chicago, I get it, because Chicago has like a big community for like, the other kin and the vampire communities, et cetera, et
Lot going
cetera.
on,
So
yeah.
like I get it. So yeah, that's still fascinating. Los Angeles beat out New Orleans. Man, New Orleans has like, you know what else is another one that's surprising that's not on this? The Salem.
Salem, yeah.
Salem's
That's
not
supposed
on
to be,
there, and
yeah.
that's a big surprise to me.
Yeah. Milwaukee? You said Milwaukee?
No, I didn't mention that. Milwaukee didn't even make it in there.
We've been there. We've been in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee's got several. Chicago. It's got a lot of haunted spots. So maybe, but we have the most popular ghost story in the entire world, Count Panic, Resurrection Mary.
We do, yes. We got
so
that on our side.
That's the list. So I think it's very fascinating. Congratulations on Los Angeles, apparently, for being the most paranormal city in the world.
I want to note the top 10 least haunted cities in the world.
Whiting, Indiana. East Chicago, Indiana.
Come on. No, we have our share of ghost stuff around.
I shouldn't say Whiting. We have like the Hoosier Theater.
And the library.
The St. John the Baptist is apparently very haunted. Okay, well, fine. I'll say
Juneau, Alaska.
Don't make me go online and see if I can find Juneau, Alaska ghost stories.
Isn't it true, Bob? Choose any city, small city, big city, you're going to find something there, right?
Yeah, but they rated it across the board. We have a caller?
We do have a caller.
Oh, second wife.
All right, we'll take it live.
Hold on. Before they talk, I'm going to guess this is, I'm going to use my psychic intuition and say it's John. You're on the air.
Hey, hi there. Oh, there. Hey there, Bob.
Oh, hey there, John. How are you?
Pretty good.
What's on your mind, tonight, bud?
Isn't it kind of ironic that the top three largest cities in the United States are at the most paranormal activity going on?
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you. Prior to this, prior to you bringing it up, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, you said New York, Chicago, Los Angeles.
In order, it was Los Angeles number one, New York number two, Chicago number three. And I'm going on a whim and saying that's probably in order of the biggest two, right? I'd assume I've been to all three. I would say Los Angeles is bigger than New York, right?
Yeah.
So in order of that too, huh? Good call, John.
Are you familiar with any of the sightings in Chicago? Did they state
they based it on different like metrics, so it wasn't just sightings, but like. What else did they do? Let me see. I'll go back up here. So sightings, locations, lifestyle, and community. I don't understand the last two per se. I know what they're getting at. They're talking about like, the vampire community, the other kin community, stuff like that. So I get it, but I don't understand why that gets lumped into the concept. But I also didn't perform the survey, so I can't really complain. The sightings in haunted locations make sense because there is quite a bit in Chicago, like off the top of my head. But the other thing is, are they thinking Chicago proper or are they thinking greater Chicago? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so it's pretty vague there.
And things would have to be broken down, like you say, too. But getting back, where was this at a butcher shop?
With the ghost sighting. That was in Argentina.
Okay, this was in a butcher shop?
Yeah, it was a butcher shop. They had they were preparing some sort of meat, and they left the knife like pretty in the middle of the table, and it went flying off the table on the ground. And then there was an apparition of what looks like a kid walking by.
Well, we're skeptics, right? We're believers, right? Or
I would say I'm believing that. I don't know. It's a tough one. I'm not going to say no or yes to it because it's.
Yeah, well, you guys looked at the video.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't, anything's possible, I guess. But the Bigfoot with two toes, I'm with you on that one. I don't know about that.
You know, every depiction I've ever seen of Bigfoot had like five toes. What I'm going to do though is I'm going to reach out to somebody who is more of an expert on it than me, and I will get a better opinion for you guys next week.
Alrighty. Hey, that sounds good. Nice to hear you again. And
thanks, John. I always appreciate when you call in.
And have a good week.
Yes, you too, John. Always a pleasure.
All right, buddy.
I always like it when John calls, and you can call in too. 219-845-1100. That's 219-845-1100.
I'm just saying, Bob, with this whole situation, going back to the cities here for a second.
Yeah.
No matter what city, big or small, there's always a ghost story lingering around.
Oh, absolutely. I would say that there's more often than not, there's definitely a ghost story attached to most cities in America. No question about that. So, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, folks, for our radio fans, stick around and we'll be right back. And for our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Oh, hey there, Count Pat.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What'd you do during break?
During break, Bob, I tried to make my own batch of mead, like you.
Oh, how'd you do? What recipe did you use?
Oh, I used an old ancient Transylvanian recipe.
I don't think mead came from Transylvania.
they had their own mead. Everybody has their own mead, Bob.
That's fair.
So, yes, it's a Transylvanian twist to the mead.
Was it a graveyard smash?
It was. Call it the Purple People Eater is what we call it. So. How about you?
You know what I did during break?
What'd you do?
I reflected on something in my life.
What'd you reflect on?
The fact that I never went to summer camp.
You never went to summer camp? Now, why is that, Bob?
I don't know. I just never went to summer camp.
I've been to some scouting summer camps before.
Like where you were gone for several weeks at a time?
Just like a week. It was a full week.
Like where you wrote home to your parents and everything? I've never had that before.
Because don't forget, this was before cell phones. So if we wanted to call home, it would be a payphone.
Sure.
Seems like it's so far ago, right? Like like something that would be like in the 80s.
It's a relic, you know, these days if you find a payphone in person.
It was only in the early 2000s that we were using payphones.
Come on, man. We even had call collect without you wouldn't even pay the 50 cents.
I guess so. But Bob, are you much of a camper?
No.
No?
No, I'm not.
You gotta do the glamping, right?
In a
cabin or something.
Yeah,
right?
What was the word they used for the Conjuring House? The
oh.
The goping?
Yeah, something like that.
The ghost camping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I
well we established from that.
Yeah, I'm not a camper, but I know a lot of people are.
There should be a like a paranormal summer camp.
I think that's what they're doing at the Conjuring House.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, not at the house. Like, choose, like, an actual campsite, I guess.
Oh, sure, and you know, just go out there.
You earn your merit badges, like ghost hunting and
EVP recording?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I think you found a new business model for me and you, Kevin.
How about that, Bob?
All right. So, you know, because I never went to summer camp, I have to reflect on that. I never got this. My mother and father never sent me away for like 3 weeks in the woods, and I never got to like make soup. Soap?
Soup or soap?
Soap,
yeah.
Soap. I know that's a thing, right? You make soap or like.
Well, I mean, you could make soap, yeah. I mean,
Did you get your merit badge in soap making?
I never got a soap making.
What about making the rope, the knots? Did you make the knots and the ropes?
Yeah, the rope tying merit
see,
badge.
See, you get it. I never did
the
any
basket.
Of
we had like a basket weaving merit badge.
And keep in mind, folks, I was a very sickly kid.
Wow.
So, like, absolutely not. If my parents would have sent me to like camp, I would have probably never came back.
That'd be it.
I would have gotten the poison oak, the poison ivy, the poison. I wouldn't have made it. I would have been eaten alive by mosquitoes. I'm good.
Probably for the best that you didn't go.
Yes, but but I can appreciate people that can. I appreciate, you know, movies like Ernest Goes to Camp and stuff. And what I'm getting at here is that there is a spooky side to camping, right?
Well,
and because we're coming off the Memorial Day weekend and we're kind of in the summer mood, we didn't have a spring mood at all.
No.
We never had spring at all this year, but I digress.
No such thing as spring.
We had no such thing as spring, so instead we're looking at the concept of summer camp, and we're going to be looking at two haunted locations in summer camp land, and one of camping's biggest like activities, I'm assuming, based on my watching of TV and stuff, is canoeing.
So this is like Camp Crystal Lake.
Welcome to Camp Bob After Dark this summer. This summer we're gonna try to look as many themes in the outdoors and summer as we possibly can. Maybe we'll dedicate the entire month of June to that. I don't know, but something like that. Camping ghosts. So I have two campgrounds that I want to talk about, and then the concept of a canoe, a spooky canoe story.
Okay.
Now, I got a funny story to tell you about said canoeing story.
Yeah.
This episode was supposed to be about haunted canoes.
Is there such a ghost thing?
No, there's not. There's...
Like the canoes themselves are haunted?
Like ghost canoes, man. Like a ghost boat.
Oh, okay. So it's not actually...
Or there might be a ghost spotted on an apparition of a canoe.
I could see that. Nothing there?
There's some. There's not enough to cover an entire episode.
So I had to lump that in with something else.
We'll
take it.
But I got to give it out to the Queen of the Night because she tried really hard. She's like, ghost canoes. And I'm like... If you could find me the stories to make a ghost canoe episode work, and lo and behold, she gave me some material, I have to put some more into it. But this is a really interesting story of the Saco River in, like, right outside New Hampshire, and it's such a cool, like, story, and it's the curse of the Saco River, okay?
Okay.
And we're going to start with the canoeing story. This is dedicated straight to the Queen of the Night for coming up with the concept, okay?
All right.
This is written by... iKirk5012, written in March 27th, 2021, on NewEnglandGhostStories.com. You ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sure?
Hit me with it.
Why are you...
I want to hear about the ghost canoe.
You ready to hear about the ghost canoe?
Yeah.
All right. So the Saco River originates in the White Mountains of New Hampshire and meanders about 136 miles through the southeast corner of the state into Maine until it finally joins the Atlantic Ocean, where the Saco and Biddleford are located. During the summer months, the Saco River was a popular spot for camping, canoeing, kayaking, and especially tubing. But to do so does come at some risk. Saco River is known for its strong undertow, surprisingly deep gorges, and rough rapids in some areas. But there may be another reason to be careful. A curse.
A curse. There's always a curse, he says.
The legend begins in late 1600s, and I might pronounce this wrong, and I probably will. My sincerest apologies to the tribe. Bear with me, okay? The Sokoki tribe, S-O-K-O-K-I. Sokoki?
Okay.
What would you say?
We'll do Sokoki.
We'll call it Sokoki. The tribe were living near the mouth of the Saco River. Their tribe was young and had a strong leader named Squando, who was well-respected by his people. He was also a powerful shaman, gifted in sorcery and magic. During this time, the white settlers lived in harmony with the tribe, and according to a legend, Squando rescued a young white girl who had been taken in a previous raid and returned to her family, and this peace lasted about 50 years. Squandro, of course, had his pick of women, and he chose a beautiful girl named, pardon me again, folks, Amagad. I write these things down beforehand to sound them out, and then I reread them, and I'm like, oh, boy. A-W-A-G-I-M-I-S-K-A to be his wife. And they soon had a son named Menewe, M-E-N-E-W-E-E. Squandro was very proud of his son and pleased with the life that he made. The year was 1675, and while other native nations were embroiled to the King Philip's War with white settlers, this particular tribe continued to live peacefully and trade with their European neighbors. That all changed until the summer of 1675, when the wife of the tribe's leader was rowing a canoe with her infant son near the Indian island in the Saco River, now known as Factory Island. An English vessel lay at an anchor near the mouth of the Saco River, and three sailors from the ship rowed up the river. According to the legend, when they spotted the tribe leader's wife with her baby, one of them exclaimed that he heard Indian babies were born knowing how to swim like an animal. And unfortunately, guys, you could probably guess where this is going, so trigger warning. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a couple seconds to skip ahead a minute or so if you need it. I'm here for you. I love you guys. I just need to give you the trigger warning. Okay. So to test the theory, they rowed up beside the canoe, grabbed the baby, and flung him in the water. The mother broke free and dove in after her baby. She rescued him, but the baby became ill and died a few days later. The sailors, for their part, continued on their way like nothing happened. But they had no idea who they were dealing with. For 3 days and nights, Squandro mourned the grave of his son. And on the third day, Squandro vowed to get revenge upon the people who had killed his son. He went down to the river and stood on its banks, and with his arms outstretched, he uttered a curse that the waters of the Saco would take the lives of 3 white people every year. The death of Squandro's son also marked the end of the peaceful relations between the settlers and the Saokis. The first major blow of King Philip's war was struck in the Saco. But what of the curse? Did the river really claim 3 lives of white people every year? In a word, yes. Every year, 3 or more people drown in the river. Old-timers recall hearing the legend told by parents and their grandparents and maintain a healthy respect for the curse. Even modern inhabitants of the region avow that an average 3 lives are lost on the Saco River per year. Until recently, as of 1947, some Maine folk, Maine is in the state, some Maine folk in the Saco battlefield area would resist to go near the waters of the Saco until they were certain that 3 people had drowned that season. Tad Baker, historian and archaeologist at the York Institute and Museum of Saco, or now just the Saco Museum, claimed that the early historical accounts describe an incident on the Saco that led an American Indian baby's death, but there is no mention of a curse until about 1880. Ruth Chaplin, a lifelong resident of Steep Falls, Maine, town librarian for 45 years, and a reporter for the Portland Press of Herald for 20 years. That's a very decorated person. Good job, Ruth. Yeah. We're proud of you on that. Chaplin recalls writing plenty of stories about drownings on the river. She says that the curse has been carried out many, many years in drownings up and down the length of the Saco. Finally, in 1947, a year passed with no drownings. The Maine Sunday Telegram headline happily proclaimed, Saco River outlives curse of Indian chief. Squandro eventually made his peace with the people, but he never...
We're good.
Man, you about gave... Oh, man. Yeah. You good back there?
Yeah,
we're Did you good. Drop something?
No. I might just kick something here accidentally.
Jeez, man. You're giving me a heart attack.
I'm sorry.
But he never did the curse, and the Saco had claimed more than its fair share of lives. So much that for centuries, Saco mothers would not allow their children to swim in the river until 3 people drowned that season. So whether because of the strong undertow or dangerous rapid, or because of Squandro's curse, visitors would all be well advised to have the healthy respect for the river. The curse led from a canoeing accident. Fascinating story, yes?
It is, Bob. And again, in this day and age, there's a lot of curses, stories regarding curses out there. And it's no surprise to me a story about a canoe could lead to a curse. But that is interesting. That is a fascinating story. True? We can only assume so.
Yes. Curse. And folks, I'm doing my due diligence on the enunciations. I look these things up, but then you get to the chance of recording and remember that we record live. So I do apologize to the tribes of that area. I don't mean to mispronounce, and I'm just reading the curse word from word. So, it's a good. I enjoyed the story at least, so I just wanted to share that.
No, it's fascinating, Bob.
Okay,
cursed
curses, yeah. Canoe curses.
Nothing worse than a canoe curse.
Nothing worse than the canoe curse. Yeah. Canoe. Gosh, you could repeat that a couple times. And now I have two fascinating stories about campgrounds. We're moving from Maine over to Ohio, this time in Cincinnati, and I'm reading this from The Enquirer, written by Sarah Brookbank for the Cincinnati Enquirer. This was written back in 2016. The ghost of Eden Park is definitely out there 90 years after she was murdered. Imogene Remus could not be reached for comment Tuesday night. This is her story, and we tried everything we could to get in touch, but our efforts to get her thoughts were only met with the rustle of leaves. Of course, she's been dead for 90 years, but there are those who believe that she's still available for interviews. This is a little tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. I figured I'd add up to this story.
Yeah.
The Enquirer sent this breaking news reporter to Eden Park to investigate rumors at the gazebo that is haunted. Echoes of music from 1927 filled the Springhouse gazebo, and we asked if Imogene was there, but no ghost appeared. But without proper ghost hunting equipment, who's to say that spiritual activity wasn't happening? maybe she didn't like the song we played. Just figured I'd add that in. It's good reporting. Yeah. I tried it. Good call there, guys. 90 years ago, Imogene Remus was gunned down in Eden Park by her husband, the bootleg king, George Remus. Her husband finally had enough of her despite serving 3 years locked up in various cells, and divorce wasn't going to be enough. The much-tangled domestic affairs of George Remus, once multimillionaire bootleg king of Cincinnati, came to a sudden and dramatic climax yesterday, the Inquirer wrote back on October 7, 1927. The day their divorce was to be finalized, George and his chauffeur followed Imogene's cab through Walnut Hills in a Hollywood-style chase. As the cab driver tried to get away, the Buick with George inside slammed into the back of it. Imogene, dressed head to toe to mourn the loss of her marriage, scrambled from the cab and tried to run. George ran after her, grabbed her by the wrist, pressed his pearl-handled revolver against her abdomen, and fired one shot that nearly hit all of her vital organs. Her daughter Ruth ran out of the car and tried to stop him from firing again, and Imogene was taken to the hospital by a witness and died 2 hours later. "I am now at peace after the 2 years of hell. I am satisfied. I've done right," he told reporters at the jail before he turned himself in. George defended himself in the court, claiming temporary insanity. A jury found him not guilty, and the rumor has it that some of the jury members were bribed. You think? If the rumors are true, Imogene does haunt the park. It's no one. If the rumors are true, it's no, you know, it makes sense why she'd be haunting it. It would seem if she had some regrets, revenge to mull over. The story goes like this. A woman in a black dress and a black hat seems to be in distress or just observing nearby Mirror Lake. She can be a real person as any person or just appear as a shadow. Then she just disappears as most ghosts are known to do. Dan Smith, owner and operator of the Haunted Cincinnati Tours, said over the past 10 years, tour groups have seen plenty of activity at Eden Park. "People have gotten a lot of weird photos," Smith said. "She's definitely out there." Smith said that more often than not, there's activity during tours. He said when questions are asked, the lights in their instruments were turned on, possibly indicating the presence of a spirit. According to the Inquirer archives, George and Imogene met in Chicago while he was a criminal lawyer. Go figure. How do you go from being a criminal lawyer to a bootlegger? The couple, who was married in 1920, then made their way to Cincinnati, and George began his bootlegging business. In just 4 years, he sold an estimated 3 million gallons of whiskey.
Wow.
When his luck finally ran out, he served time at an Atlanta penitentiary. In the early summer, in September 1925, Imogene filed for divorce, alleging that George had been guilty of extreme cruelty on a number of occasions. He was due to be released from the penitentiary after a 2-year sentence and then serve a year in the prison in the Cincinnati area. The Inquirer reported that he told her to file for divorce after calling her vile and unmentionable names when she visited him in Atlanta. Imogene also asked for the restraining order. During the murder trial, Imogene's daughter Ruth testified against George. The prosecution also presented a note written by Imogene to a family member about the divorce hearing only 2 days before the shooting. "Go to Ruth at once if they hurt me. I am brave and realize that evidence is important," Imogene wrote. George counted down the days to the divorce charges with... George counted the divorce with the charges that Imogene and Franklin Dodge, a prohibition agent, were carrying an illicit love affair and conspiring to kill and defraud him. The web of lies keeps getting spun, right?
Yeah.
All of this is what George said caused his temporary insanity that led to killing his wife.
Yeah.
In December 1927, 3 months after the murder, the jury found Remus not guilty. Imogene's remains were sent back to her family in Chicago. Last rites were omitted, and the burial was secret and mysterious as the arrival of the body in Chicago from Cincinnati, the Inquirer reported. After that, there's not much more in the Inquirer archives about that Remus woman. As for her ghost, curious parties should visit the Eden Park gazebo within the park's hours of operation or risk trespassing charges. "It's creepier than any ghost story because it really happened," Smith said. this is some history that really happened, and these stories are from history, our best guess as to why this is happening. So Eden Park as a whole, it's a normal park operation.
Yeah.
But people camp there as well. It's on a lot of lists. If you look at like the top 10, like most haunted campground stories online, this always pops up in like the top five or something.
You think people to this day, you think people go there not knowing about the lore of it all and just want to go camping? Or is it now strictly a destination for people that are hip?
50-50. I mean, this story was written back in 2017. I'm sure that this probably got spread around, you know, this greater Cincinnati area, and it's probably a popular story there. But I mean, I'm pretty hip to ghost stories in up and around the areas, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I've never heard this one before.
No.
So I would say it's a 50-50, but man, can you imagine the random person that went out there to like do, you know, just to go camping, and then they're seeing a woman in black walking around, which by the way, folks,
different
than our typical women in white. Take that, Pat from Ghostly Podcast.
How about that? Yeah, you don't get the woman in black too often.
You get the women in white and sometimes the woman in green.
Really?
It's not often you see the women in black story. So
yeah.
Good on them for giving us a new story.
Yeah.
And tragic ending, man. And the intricate levels to this, too, are pretty wild, you know? Criminal attorney becomes the bootlegger, then chases down his wife and shoots her, pleads temporary insanity, and then gets off.
Yeah.
Not guilty.
No.
And I wonder if the jurors were bribed. Do you think?
It had to be, right?
There's
no explanation there for that. But the camping situation, once again, takes a strong person to go camping. Two, if it's a paranormal campsite, that's even crazier. Do we have any stories, and I know we got more, but do we have any stories about like ghost raccoons later in the show?
There's tanuki stories, but that's not...
The campsites?
Campsites, no.
Ghost
Unless
raccoons?
I find like Japanese.
Terrifying.
Yeah, something terrifying. Like that. Yeah. All right. I have a new story that was just sent in to me.
What? Hot off the press?
Hot off the press.
This never happens. This is unheard of.
The legend of the flying canoe.
Oh, there's a flying canoe?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I regretted not to include this as part of the original episode lineup because initially when I received the article from the Queen of the Night, it was just a painting of a flying canoe, and I looked at it and I said, why am I talking about this? But there's lore behind it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do my due diligence, because I did not include this in my initial lineup.
Okay.
So my apologies. I know there's plenty of people out there who are like, ghost canoe stories, Bob, we need more. I'm going to provide. So the legend of the flying canoe. This is written by Robert Dossett back in 1996 on the NFB.ca website. New Year's Eve, late 1800s, a group of loggers in an isolated lumber yard yearn to celebrate with their loved ones, but the river is frozen. If the men want to see their families, their only choice is to make a pact with the devil to fly in a flying canoe. And it's a very famous like short film.
Really? Okay.
And there's paintings depicting this as well.
I had no clue. Wow.
Yeah.
A flying canoe.
Who
would have thunk it?
Yes. Now the other part of the flying canoe story, that the concept that the other part of this, is just, it's a flying canoe.
I would never guess there.
So it's definitely a thing. It's, you know, there's a short little artsy movie about it, and there is the painting of the flying canoe, but there's lore behind it.
Yeah.
That somebody made a pact with the devil to go flying in a canoe.
So instead of playing in a fiddle battle, this one has more of a canoe type stuff behind it. So that's pretty fascinating.
Welcome to Camp Bob After Dark. We got flying canoes, cursed canoes.
Hot off the press.
And we got one more.
Yeah.
We got one more story. This one is written from the Paranormal Housewife. This is a blog. Back in 2020, this was written. Kelly Butler from San Diego wrote this, so hats off to you, Kelly Butler.
Yeah.
So you guys check this out. She writes a lot of cool articles, but this specifically is about a campsite in California, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. If you search the most haunted campgrounds in America, this typically makes number
one. This one right here?
This is number one on most lists.
Okay.
So we're going to read it once again. Thank you, Kelly, from Paranormal Housewife. Let's read in here. The campground being talked about in this post has more than just ghosts scaring up the camp there. Something in this area seems to be attracting more than the living. Even the forest rangers that work have never experienced things that they can't explain. Lake Morena Campground is located in Campo, California, just 42 miles east of San Diego. The dam that created the lake was finished in 1912. The water in the reservoir was meant to supply San Diego with water. In 1915, with the drought plaguing the area, San Diego hired Chester Hartfield to fill the reservoir. He agreed to cause it to rain in exchange for $10,000 when the reservoir was filled. Hartfield built the tower that was supposed to release his secret mixture of chemicals into the air that would make it turn to rain. The tower was ready for use on January 1, 1916. On January 5th, when it began to heavily rain, the rain would continue for 15 days before finally ending. By the time the rain stopped, one dam was overflowed and another dam was broken. Trains were stranded, phone lines were cut, and over 50 people were dead or missing from the flooding. After many court sessions, Chester Hartfield was not paid because he refused to accept responsibility for damages caused by the rain. The court ruled it as an act of God. Nowadays, visitors are able to camp, go boating, fishing, and hiking around the lake, but they won't be alone when they do these activities. Many people have reported hearing heavy footsteps around their tents at night, but nothing is there upon inspection. Among the campsites in the forest, a woman can be heard singing or laughing when nobody's actually around. A woman dressed in, can you guess the color?
We have one in black, but I'm guessing this is white.
Yes, a woman dressed in white.
It would be crazy to have two women in black stories tonight.
We need a woman in white, like, ding counter. Remind me to find one to edit
it
in post.
It's a bunch of them.
Yes, a woman in white is seen standing on or by the boulders to the west of the campground. When it's late at night or near sunrise, people often report seeing floating ghosts in the forest above the lake. They are said to be floating about 10 feet above the ground. Could these be the spirits of the people who died in the floods? Hmm. And it's not just campers or hikers that report strange occurrences. The forest rangers that work there have often reported odd things. In the dam keeper's house, footsteps have been heard walking throughout the home. Hmm. Forest Ranger Tracy Walker said that one time the log book that they use every day was suddenly gone from where it was kept on the desk. She said that she looked through everything in the office and couldn't find it. It wasn't found until much later that they said that when she said it was suddenly found laying in the bathtub. Hmm. A volunteer, Walter Stucker, also recounted the odd experience that he had. He was staying in a motor home on the campground when he was startled awake. He said that he glanced out the window by the bed he was sleeping in and was surprised to see a tall man looking into his window. Mm. Which, just, you know, that's a goosebump saying sentence right there. Stucker said that the man wore a dark coat and looked like a knitted cap. Stucker watched as the man turned and walked towards the lake, and it wasn't until the man had walked several feet towards the lake that Stucker realized that the man was walking about a foot off the ground. Mm. While there have been many stories about the ghosts that haunt Lake Morena, they are often visitors to that area. The area surrounding the lake has been known to have a higher than normal reports of UFOs. Many people talked about seeing UFOs at night. The UFOs have seen reported over the lake, over the mountains that surround the lake, and seen over the forest as well. Most report seeing lights in the V shape, and the size of the lights are is as bright as the moon itself. So that is that's an interesting little tidbits about the scariest campground in America.
Yeah, you know, it is pretty terrifying when you really think, come down to it. Because camping enough, Bob, when you go on these trips, and I've been on a few of them, one being the summer camp for a week there when I was a kid for scouts, it's kind of eerie enough. You're out there in the woods, it's dark, there's critters squeaking in the background. So it's already got that eerie feeling to it. Then you add these ghost stories, women in black, women in white, the tall man, the raccoons.
Just walking on air, by the way.
The flying canoe. Flying
canoe, the cursed canoe.
You add all that stuff into the mix, it's even more terrifying.
Yeah, so yeah. Welcome to Camp Bob After Dark.
What's for lunch?
Macaroni and cheese.
All right.
Tomorrow we're having pizza. But all throughout the month of June, maybe pizza. Even into July, we'll do some summer-related activity stories. Maybe we're going to take a look into some National Forest stuff, which, you know, if you guys know anything about that, that's super creepy. But I'm looking forward to talking with you guys about Camp Bob After Dark.
No swimming.
No swimming. No night swimming. Actually, no day swimming. All of you can do is night swimming. Yeah.
See, you don't want to go into the water of a haunted campsite either, because you'll be dragged under by something probably.
Yeah, that's not my problem. by coming to Camp Bob After Dark, you agree that I'm not responsible for any damages emotionally or physically.
It'd be kind of cool. We need to talk to. We need to set up a Camp Bob After Dark.
You know what? If we did Camp Bob After, oh geez,
you could be the
listen.
Counselor?
If somebody wants to design a Camp Bob After Dark logo, I will
giant wooden logo out there greeting you to the camp.
I mean, like a digital one.
No, we make it a full place, man.
You know, we could do
a real
like,
campground.
You know, I'm thinking if we came out with like paranormal merit badges, like I think that's clever. That's a clever idea.
Yeah, well, what else can you earn it in?
EVPs, EMF, changing the batteries proper.
Battery merit badge.
Are you separating your batteries when you put them in the cases?
Yes, that's what you got to do. What else? Maybe we could probably make a list.
Absolutely. Well, folks, welcome to Camp Bob After Dark, and I'll be your, me and Count Panic will be your camp counselors this year, this summer.
Bugles, 5 a.m.
No, we're good. You guys can sleep in till like 7 at least. Right. I'm usually up by like 7 or 8.
Let them sleep in.
You guys can sleep in. I'm not going to make you get up, but I am going to make you to like do activities.
Sure.
Like making a wallet. Did you ever make a wallet?
I never made a wallet, no. I made a candle once, I remember. A candle.
Did you earn your candle making merit badge?
I don't know if there was such a candle making. I'm trying to think of the merit badge. I racked up about five or six in that trip.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah, I mean, but see, the thing is, you got to keep going back, and then eventually the goal is to become an Eagle Scout.
Did you ever make it to Eagle?
I never made it to Eagle. I was kind of too far behind to catch up. And once you hit 18... you can't really go any further because you become a man at that point. It's not the man scouts. It's the boy scouts.
Have you ever thought about being a counselor?
Nah.
Like run your own troop?
Yeah, Bob after a Camp Bob,
Camp
after,
Bob after Dark.
Vampire class. Yeah, the vampire course. Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any closing words for our audience this evening?
Summer is officially kicking off at Camp Bob After Dark. Yes, until next time.
Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to say goodnight to all of you. Sweet dreams to my mother and my father, wherever you are in the universe. I hope you're happy, comfortable, and doing whatever it is that makes you happy. And Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important roles of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.